cliffcentral.com. Donald Molosi is an author, an actor, a classically trained playwright, among other things. He is someone who's here in South Africa for a little bit, and I was introduced to him by the lovely, gorgeous Rosie Mudene. It's nice to see you, Rosie.
Thank you. Always a pleasure seeing you.
Yeah, we've missed you around here.
Thank you. I miss being here, actually.
I know. Yeah. You've got to make a plan.
I'm going to.
You're busy all over the continent, huh?
Yeah.
You get around and you're meeting amazing people like
Beautiful
Donald.
Beautiful people, talented people who are doing amazing stuff.
So how did you meet Donald? And then we can introduce him properly.
I was in Botswana with one of my other artists who was doing the CNN Africa Voices.
Mm-hmm.
And the producer from CNN was like, do you know about this guy, Donald? And I'm like, I've been reading up about him for the last 2 years, but he's based in New York. I can't touch him. She was like, actually, he's home.
Wow.
And then that evening after the shoot, as luck had it, one of my other artists, King Tux, is actually Donald's good friend. And we had drinks afterwards. And yeah.
Well, I was looking through your CV, man, and you have done a lot of interesting stuff.
Thank you.
My God, you've worked with, I see here, let me just look here. Oh, David Oyelowo, Rosamund Pike.
Yes.
I see you've received thousands of awards. And I must be honest, I first heard about you when it came to this, the story of Tsiritsikama.
Oh, okay. Yes. That's the story I've been dedicated to telling for a third of my life, literally.
Well, you are Botswana.
Yes, I am.
And I love that country. It's a, you know, they punch so far above their weight in terms of the people there and the influence they manage to extend, and the fact that it is just such a hub.
Yeah.
And it's becoming more and more so. You know, there's so many countries in Africa that we look at and we go, oh, well, they're doing okay. But we don't look at the ones like Botswana and go, my God, they're doing better than okay.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah.
And they really are a success story.
Absolutely.
So I think if you can call yourself Botswana these days, you have a lot to be proud of.
Mm.
Yes, I'm very, very proud. There's a lot of people doing similar work as well. And I'm glad that now it's becoming more of an industry,
yeah,
not just individuals achieving things individually.
But such a small population of people and so much talent.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, whether it's in acting or it's in music or it's in radio,
you
know, whatever it is. You know,
yeah,
if you think about all the people who've come out of there, and we've got O'Neill here.
Yeah.
I've been friends with Fresh for years, and there are lots of really, really amazing people who come out of there. So tell us your story.
Yes. So I was born in Botswana and did finished high school in Botswana. Well, most of high school in Botswana. I finished high school in the U.S., actually, and then lived in the U.S. through college, graduate school, working on Broadway at the time, because I first got
What's that like?
That was amazing, because I got off Broadway when I was in college.
Wow.
So I was a student, and that was the same year I got my first Hollywood film.
But, dude, they say that is the toughest environment in the performing arts, full stop. I mean, maybe comedy's harder, maybe.
Yeah.
But even if you're in comedy, you do it in New York, it's on a level that Broadway. You know, they throw people out like that.
Oh, yeah.
If you can't sing, dance, act, and do them all at 10 out of 10 levels, you're gone, right?
Yep. And you're doing that like 8 shows a week.
Oh, my God. Awesome. And you're not necessarily earning, and you're still not necessarily earning a lot.
No, not at all.
Yeah. Because on Broadway, you're just thrilled to have a job.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And the rent is so bloody expensive.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Cost of
living. So that's how you started.
Yes. That's how I started with... I mean, by the time I went to Botswana, I had already been a child actor. I was one of the first children to be on television in Botswana, because we only got a national television station in 2000.
Wow.
So before 2000, there was no TV in Botswana. We only watched South African.
You're kidding.
Yeah, yeah.
There was no locally made television.
So when I came in on TV...
The SABC got so bad, they even had to build their own station.
So before 2000, we didn't have... And so then when I came in, it was the first time that the nation actually had seen a child on television. But that was just like a year before I left for the US.
And how long were you there for?
In the US?
Yeah.
For half of my life. I'm 31. I was there for 15 years.
So you're kind of half American, half Botswana.
Right, right. Yeah, in a lot of ways.
And to be able to work as an actor in America when you're not born there, it's hard enough when you are born there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
To have got to that position, they must really like you.
I hope so.
You must have blown the roof off.
Yeah, it was crazy because, you know, America already has its own issues of... we want this person, not that kind of person. But then you are coming in, you're different in all the ways. You know, it's like black actors will complain about, oh, you know, in America, black actors don't get roles, but you're a different type of black that's even more different.
Well,
because you're African.
But then they want you to look like Jumon Honsu, or they want you to look like Idris Elba.
You got to sound more African.
Yeah, and you have to sound more African or more American, depending on who you're working with.
Right. Mm. It's almost impossible.
It's impossible. So you're constantly...
It's like niche within a niche within a niche, right?
Exactly. So you're constantly trying to find your way through it. And I think for me, the story of Ruth and Sarah Sakama was a big element of why then.
Now, this movie has got critical acclaim everywhere, United Kingdom. And that's where I first heard your name mentioned. And I haven't seen it yet, which I apologize for because I wanted to.
It's a great film.
And see his documentary before you see the film.
But you see, I'm a history fan. So for me, this is a spectacular love story above all else.
Yeah.
But it's also... It's a story of so much that we like to look at the past as being very black and white, monolithic.
Mm.
There weren't any rule breaking. Everything kind of, it all fitted into some kind of template.
Absolutely.
But these two people broke that mold in every which way.
They did.
Sir Sarit Sekama was like a British aristocrat. Mm. And this white woman who he married... People in Botswana were horrified when they heard about this.
Absolutely. And so was the British Empire.
Yes.
And for me, like, you know, the love story is the biggest part of it. But also the fact that little old Bechuanaland stood up against the British Empire and said, we love interracial marriages. And Botswana...
Can you imagine?
And Botswana at the time being surrounded by Zambia, South Africa, Namibia and Zimbabwe, all of them racist regimes.
Yeah.
So they could have totally wiped us off the face of the earth and said, you know, we don't...
So,
yeah, yeah. But the way history unfolded was so beautiful.
And the legacy that this man left. I mean, look, a lot of people say that it's kind of dynastic that his son is now the prime minister there and that, you know, it seems to me almost like it's a family business. And many people complain about that. But this is some family, first and foremost. And this guy was some... This Sir Sarit Sekama was something else.
Oh, yeah. He was... I tell my American friends, Gareth, because when Barack Obama was... you know, campaigning to be president, I was in high school in the U.S. And it was a huge deal, obviously. But I kept telling them, you know, before America considered having a black president, we already had a black African president who led the biggest economy, fastest growing economy in the world for 20 years in Botswana. So for us, black excellence is not so... it's
we're
more
not,
normal.
We're not a surprise.
Yeah. We're not surprised, but we're happy for you.
There is this bond, though, between Botswana and the rest of sub-Saharan Africa now, because I think a lot of people have started to realize that this country is not going to be pushed around. Mm. And they make their own rules. I mean, there are certain crimes that you will be put to death for.
Absolutely.
They don't care if the next door neighbors don't think that that's acceptable.
No.
And if you do business there, there are certain advantages to doing business. There are a lot of South African companies are now moving into Botswana.
Mm-hmm.
And for the arts, is there a thriving community of people inside, like, Gaborone?
There is a community of people, but a lot of them are outside of Botswana.
Mm.
So a lot of us do work outside or stay outside. So it's very hard to get that group in Botswana. For example, like people like Warona Setswalo and people like that. Like, I can only collaborate them if I'm outside Botswana because it's easier.
Yeah.
In the industries that already function. But it's growing. It's growing. And we're trying to be more exposed to the continent's talent.
The reason I'm asking all these questions about Botswana is because you're a brand ambassador of the country, right?
Right, yes, yeah. Yes.
I mean, that's quite a nice position to be in.
Yes,
something you care about anyway, so you're good at it. But, but what does it mean in terms of responsibilities and duties?
The deal that I have with them is an individual one where they support the work that I do that has to do with the country.
Okay.
And then I don't have to change anything in the way I do things.
And when you play a role that's as important to the country as you have, what kind of reception did you get back home?
Well, first of all, I freaked out when I went back home because I was worried about that I wrote it with those people in mind. And if they didn't like it, it would devastate me. But I remember performing the first night and people were crying just in front of me. And I was wondering, why are they crying? I'm telling a really lovely love story. But I realized this is a nation that's encountering its history for the first time. Wow. This story doesn't exist in our schools. It's never told. So like the world...
How could it not have been told? What better stories did they have?
Yeah. So they were hearing it for the first time. And I loved that.
I'm serious though. How could they have left this out? I mean, how
but
did
but
kids...
that also leads to why you wrote the essay Dear Upright African.
Yeah. Yes.
And just by the way, while we're talking about this, let everybody know We Are All Blue is a collection of two plays, Motswana Africa Dream Again and Blue, Black and White, by Donald, who we're interviewing this morning, and includes an introduction by Kwet Masire, former president of Botswana.
Yes.
Now, are these available? Can we get them online?
Yes, they're on Amazon. They're at Zara Books, where we're launching on Saturday. They will have the books for South African readers as well.
Okay. All right, so back to your story. So you come up with the idea that you're going to write this.
Yes.
And how long did it take you? Was it very difficult? Was there a lot of research involved?
Yes, yes. There was so much research involved. Because the love story... No one has ever put it together as a love story. They've always been like a political... You know how there is no film really that's about Winnie and Nelson? Mm. It's the same. That no one has had that kind of a... So then I had to go to three continents to find puzzles of this love story. And that took 8 years. And that took a lot of resources. Mm. And it was, and then 10 years later, a United Kingdom comes along after my plays. So then when they came along, they had an easier time because there were a few of us who had already written those lives as love stories.
So what did you find out about these two people at the center of this love story?
I knew Lady Khama personally, Sirasa's wife. And I first met her when I was very young. And I know the family very well. But really, it was going to drama school in London when I was training as an actor, that I realized I'm being trained with Shakespearean texts that teach me about British history. Mm. Wouldn't it be nice if I were learning technique through a text that also teaches me about myself? And then I realized Sirasa's story doesn't exist, so I had to write it.
And tell me about him, what you discovered about the man while you were studying and researching and putting the story together.
Absolutely. I was so in awe of him because one of the things that Nelson Mandela said when he got out of jail was that he was really inspired by Sirasa Khama when he was in jail on Robben Island. I never knew that. And for Sirasa to inspire Nelson Mandela, that put it in perspective for me, the magnitude of his legacy. And actually, when Mandela became president, Botswana was the first country he visited as president because he said,
that
country made me keep my faith in jail by resisting breaking up that couple.
Do you think that they would be pleased with this portrayal?
I really think so. I really think so. I think especially I've spoken to the family.
Yeah.
Their sons and daughter, and they are pleased. I think obviously they lived their lives, so of course they will have
different takes on
things. But yeah, I think they would be.
But was it important to you that they liked it, or was it more important that you told the story as beautifully and as objectively as you could?
Yeah, it was the latter, because actually I never consulted the family until they saw it like 5 years after it had premiered off Broadway, because I didn't want it to be propaganda. Hmm. I realized that I was talking about the father of a sitting president, so I didn't want any of those things to taint my work as art. So they saw it like everyone else in Botswana 5 years after the premiere.
And do you think that the story will do anything in terms of waking the rest of this continent up to the history that we don't know, to the history that we could do a lot better to figure out, the kind of important lessons we can learn from their story?
Absolutely. And Rosie mentioned earlier that I wrote an essay called Dear Upright African, where I really advocate for African history to be put in African classrooms. It seems ordinary to right-thinking people, but it's something that is not done in Botswana and on the continent. So I hope this story now will be considered by Botswana to actually put it in the curriculum. Because one of the most heartbreaking things for me is that my book, which is about them, is in classrooms in the U.S. It's taught in university in the U.S., in East Africa. But in my own country, in Botswana, there's still resistance to telling the story of Ruth and Sirasa.
Why? Just because it was an interracial love affair?
Because it wasn't in the colonial curriculum. So we haven't changed our curriculum since the
60s. Still this hangover. Yeah. That is superior stuff. We need to know about that.
Yeah,
we'll learn about Napoleon.
Right.
But we won't learn about our own leaders.
Because even when the essay came out, I mean, he didn't mention his school at all. and he just spoke in context of the education system.
Yeah.
And there was one particular teacher who lashed out at him and was verbally abusive and everything.
You're kidding.
And yeah, because, and we were like, well, let's break this down. Why are you so angry?
About African history?
Yeah. And calling him insecure and, you know, it's got like blown up.
Learn French and all this stuff.
Where do you think that they think that's an insecurity on her part?
Yeah.
I mean, that's her feeling a certain way about herself.
Yeah.
It's like a self-worth issue.
But I think
issue,
it's also to do with the, I don't want to call it white guilt, but it's more, I suppose, more white privilege. Because one of the things was, well, he should just be grateful for what we did for him.
Oh, this is a white woman.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, I understand.
Yeah.
So, okay, I thought it was a black woman.
Yeah.
It's a white woman who was so upset.
Yeah.
What do you think? What would someone like Lady Khama say to her?
I think she would be very disappointed because they paid such personal price to create this country. I mean, that's why we have the flag, blue, black, and white, because we were the first country in the world in 1966 to have a symbol of racial harmony because of these two people in our flag. So they paid a personal price. I think she'd be very disappointed. But she'd also be encouraging to people like me who try to do the opposite.
I just love that it's so original. Everybody's always saying all the best stories may have already been written, which is the most sad thing anyone can say. It's like saying all the best songs have been written.
Right, you know?
What are we alive for then? We may as well just quit. Like humans should just die. I love that this is an uncovered treasure.
Mm. Yeah.
And that you have had a hand as someone from Botswana, because so often we're so used to people from outside telling our stories for us.
Yes.
Which I'm also sick of because they miss things that mean a lot to us.
And also that authenticity and small little dynamics.
Yeah.
Well, listen, man, congratulations.
Thank you so much, Gary.
And I wish you every other success. I mean, you've already done so much. You've got so many awards. People are giving you acclaim everywhere you go, and you well deserve all of it.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
I hope that we haven't seen the last of you here in South Africa.
Not at
You'll
all.
Come and visit us again. And all the best with all the endeavors going forward.
Thank you. And thank you for having me on the show.
What an absolute pleasure. And Rosie, love seeing you.
Love seeing you too.
Awesome. CliffCentral.com.